Jason Waller here, True Underdog Podcast and YouTube channel. Listen, make sure you subscribe today. You can go to iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can go to our YouTube channel, True Underdog, or you can visit trueunderdog.com and subscribe to all of it.
Damn, 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 True Underdog. Damn, damn, unleash damn. The power within. Damn, damn, damn. Damn.
Jason Waller here, True Underdog Podcast. Today, we're speaking with Steve Ulscher, entrepreneur, author, international keynote speaker, and podcast host. Steve is the founder of Podcast Magazine, the original chairman and founder of Liquor.com, and podcast host himself of Reinvention Radio and Beyond Eight Figures. If that wasn't enough, he also hosts New Media Summit every year. Steve's been featured on the cover of Founder Magazine. He appeared on ABC, CNN, The Huffington Post, and Fox, and has been on over 300 radio shows. But more importantly, he's the author of What Is Your What? Here today to help us all find out what in life. Steve, thanks for coming on the show. How are you doing?
Good, man. Appreciate you having me.
Good, good. So you grew up pretty humble beginnings in Illinois. I have a house in Michigan, so I can relate to the horrible weather I'm sure you grew up with. But your parents divorced when you were around 7. You started working a job around 10. And, you know, you said, bam, I'm born to be an entrepreneur. How did your childhood impact you to actually want to be an entrepreneur?
You know, I think it was really just simply a matter of we're all wired to excel in very specific ways. For me, just it's always been a part of the DNA, man, you know, and just seeing how there's struggle and then there's real struggle, you know. And I'm not going to sit here and say that we had real struggle in terms of there was always something to eat. There was always a roof over the head. There was always, you know, lights on and that sort of thing. Were we living in any sort of glamorous lifestyle? No. Did we have roaches in the house? Did we have mice in the house, or, you know, at various times? Yeah, right. But, you know, I think there's a lot of folks who want to kind of play up all the tough times that they had and how bad it was for them. You know, yeah, parents split, got divorced. My brother was in and out of mental hospitals. Yeah, he just was not a stable dude. Scary, dangerous, you know, the whole nine. Were there problems? Of course. But at the same token, I just, you know, I've got all my limbs. I've got my health. There are people who have it a lot worse off, right? So for me, man, I think it was really just a matter of not wanting to be so dependent on others. But I think even more so just not wanting to put any extra burden on my mom, who was doing the best that she could to raise me and my older sister and the brother who I just mentioned. So after my dad split, man, you know, it was just really a matter of what can I do to try to bring in some money? I want to get some things. I don't want to put it on mom. And, you know, that was just the whole goal there was put some money aside, get what I need so that I just didn't have to burden her with all that.
When you were younger, and I have a similar background growing up, you know, we had food, but we lived in a trailer park. People made fun of me in high school. I had this intuition and hunger to want more. Didn't even know what entrepreneur meant as a kid, even as a young adult, struggled with that. But would you agree that part of it is when you're in that moment, it doesn't seem that bad. You look back, you're like, wow, that was kind of pretty tough and I got through that okay. But that kind of helped molded and motivated you to want more? Was that part of the push of, I got to want more. My family's got to want more. I've got to be better. Is that some of the push that you had?
Yeah. And I'll tell you, it's one of those things that I don't think was conscious whatsoever. I mean, again, I believe that we are all naturally wired to excel in very specific ways. And I think you could have taken, I'll challenge you with this, which is I think you could have grown up in a mansion with 16 cars and, you know, 10,000 odd square feet of space just for you with the sport court and the swimming pool and the jacuzzi and the beachfront property and the Lear, you know, and the whole nine. And I don't think your drive would have been any different, you know, and I could be dead wrong, but the point being, I don't think that, let me put it to you this way, as one of the things that I talk about in the book, which you mentioned, What Is Your What, is I believe that your what has chosen you. And I don't believe it's that which you have chosen. So reality is, could you get there faster? Could you tap into more capable people who have access to more resources if you're born in sort of that silver spoon sort of way? Sure. But at the same token, I honestly believe that the results that I've realized in my life and the results that you've realized in your life, you would have realized and I would have realized regardless of any of those circumstances that we were faced with.
You know, you mentioned your book, What Is Your What? And discover the one amazing thing that you were born to do. The advice that you just explained, it picks you. I like that you say that because I think that you're exactly right. I believe everybody's got attributes. God gives us where our strengths and our weaknesses, right? Some people are tall, some people are fast, some people are super smart, some people are, you know, motivated. Everybody's got their things and kind of goes back to what your book is. You're what you got to pick or choose as you, but you got to pick the route you're going to go on. Growing up as a child, and then getting into the realm of writing that book is part of the motivation in that book to share. And I haven't read the book and I'm going to because I see the information on it. And that's solid. I think that people need to know what is their what and they need to let that find them. And I think that's exciting. But well, let me ask you this. Do you think a lot of what's in the book, does it go from childhood? Because there's a couple of things I'm going to ask you about in the mid, you know, George early career. Does a lot of it stem from the childhood or is it later in the career that you write about finding you? What is your what?
Yeah, so a lot to unpack there. So let me try to break it down a little bit. So first and foremost, I think in author land, we write the book that we most need, right? So for me, I've always had sort of that struggle, which is why am I here? What is it that I was really put on this planet to do? What are my unique gifts? How am I different from other people who share this lifetime with me, right? So taking the Myers-Briggs, taking the what color is your parachutes, the strengths finders and these sort of things, they all really left me, all those modalities, I mean, they're great, but they all really left me with more questions than answers. And so I still found myself in that struggle of really just trying to figure out, you know, what the hell should I really be doing here? And I had found some success, and we don't have to go too granular on this, but I had found some success in the business world, opening my own nightclub when I was very young and so on. And I had began teaching others about business and trying to help them launch their business, market, monetize, grow, et cetera, et cetera. And in a lot of those conversations, what I found is that a lot of people just didn't know where to start. They didn't even know what business to start with. And really went back then to the same sort of questions that I had about myself, right? Which is, what is it that I'm here to do? How am I going to do it? What's that all going to look like? And again, having tried the modalities, still having the questions, I decided, you know what, there's got to be an easier way here. And as I began working with more people and just trying to talk them through this process of really figuring out what it is that they can do, what they want to do, what they're good at doing, and what they can make money doing, it became really clear that there's just three key pieces of the puzzle that each of us needs to be able to solve for. And if we can solve for these three pieces, which are the gift, the vehicle, and the people, and I'll go into that here in a second, it really makes a tremendous difference, right? And so the What Is Your What framework is really all about identifying your core gift, which means how are you naturally wired to excel? Each of us has a core gift, whether it's communicating or enrolling or protecting or entertaining or whatever that might be, we each have a core gift. The next piece of that puzzle is then understanding the primary vehicle that you'll use to share that gift. And then the third piece of the puzzle is having clarity on the people that you are most compelled to serve. And so it's a combination of the gift, the vehicle, and the people that make up the What Is Your What framework. And as you can imagine here, you know, most people will go a lifetime without being able to have clarity around one of those pieces, let alone all three. But going back to your original question here, if I look back on my career, what I know to be true is that my gift and your gift and everyone else's gift who walks this planet, that the gift, that piece of the framework is static. It is in place. It's why if you look at the cover of What Is Your What, you'll see that we have the DNA strand, right? Because that is in your DNA. You did not choose to have that particular gift. It's there. You can choose to ignore it for your life, or you can choose to tap into it, right? But that gift is there. But your vehicle that you'll use to share that gift and the people that you're most compelled to serve, those are more organic. Those are more fluid. And those pieces can change throughout your life. So in answer to your question, as I look back on my career, I believe that my gift has really stayed the same, but the vehicle that I've chosen to share that gift and the people that I'm most compelled to serve has changed over time, depending on what comes in and out of my life or what comes in and out of me.
You know, that's deep stuff. And I like it. I mean, I like deep stuff. I always think that one of the best things we can do is share our knowledge. And you started podcasting before it was cool. You're one of the OGs of podcasting. Like you run the podcast magazine. And I started a career early in sales and saw that if I'm passionate about something and I believe in something, I'm really good at getting other people to be a part of that, right? To follow me into that.
Which, by the way, leads me to believe that based on the success that you've had, especially with what you're doing now and growing into the level that you've grown at, you are a magician in terms of enrolling people into your vision. Like more than anything else, that's probably your core gift, which is enrolling.
Dude, that's awesome. I never looked at it that way. That's pretty cool. That a magician and enrolling people. I love that. And I have always been intimidated on, you know, when I was young, I didn't finish high school. I didn't finish college. I was intimidated to try to really step out and be a leader, to run a company, to have people that have college education and more experience than me. That was tough. I had to overcome a lot of those challenges. But then when I got them to believe, you know, it started to work and I started to grow. And I got into podcasting recently. And this is a hard business. And I did it for fun. And then it kind of took off and I've had some cool guests on it. But one of the most compelling things for me doing this is learning from people like you, but also some of the compliments, the messages, that anything I get from people that maybe it helped their day, it gave them some advice, you know, whatever it did. When you were doing podcasting before it was cool, one of the OGs, and then it started to grow and take off, what were the things that inspired you so much to keep doing podcasting?
Yeah, so just to be clear, the first episode, the first podcast episode that we released was of our show Reinvention Radio, which we released in 2009. Now, I went on and off for a number of years and eventually stayed with it pretty much full-time from 2015 on. And when I say full-time, I just mean in terms of releasing episodes on a consistent basis. And I think all in, we've done about 1,000 episodes of Reinvention Radio in total. We also launched another show called Beyond Eight Figures, which we sold, and that's a conversation for another day and perhaps interesting to your folks who are into podcasts as well. But what I would just simply say is, for me, it ebbs and it flows. I mean, if I'm not fully into it, it's tough to consistently release new episodes. Fortunately, I hit a pretty good run there where week after week after week, I wanted to sit down in the studio and get those episodes out. As I sit here today, I can tell you that I haven't actually released a new episode of Reinvention Radio for about 3 months now. So I'm a little bit in that a little bit in that lull there as it ebbs and it flows. But for me, you really have to have clarity. And again, yeah, it's a lot more crowded than it was certainly when I started. Certainly when it was in 2015. But regardless of what the numbers are in terms of the number of shows, it really is so important to understand who the people are, going back to the what is your what framework, right? Understanding who the people are that you're most compelled to serve and having a show that supports your desire to really serve them. And at this moment, my desire to serve people who are reinventing their lives, which was the original premise and promise of Reinvention Radio and sharing the stories of others who were doing A and now they're doing B and how they're changing the world as a result, that same fire is kind of sitting on a few embers at this moment.
Yeah, that's, well, we've got COVID and the world's been upside down a little bit. So all is reasonable slowing down. You're the CEO and founder of Podcast Magazine. You founded it. And let's talk about that. What inspired you to really create that magazine?
Yeah, man. So I have been, one of the things that I'm very good at over the years is being a promoter and really shining a spotlight on others who are doing amazing things in this world. Not only because I love connecting with them much like you do and learning about what they're up to and befriending them and in some cases literally having ongoing relationships with them, but mostly because I just think that that far too few people who are doing things that the world needs to know about, have the opportunity for the world to know about what it is that they're doing, right? So the idea behind Podcast Magazine was twofold. Number one, as more and more podcasts came onto the scene, and being perfectly honest here and transparent, I knew that based on the merits and the success of our shows alone, I wasn't going to be at the epicenter of the conversations around podcasting. And if that was the conversation that I most wanted to be a part of, like for you, maybe it's solar, right? So that's just a core. We'll kind of do a couple of rabbit holes here for a second, but that is a fundamental question that every business owner has to be able to answer, which is the question of what conversation do you most want to be part of, right? And so once we gained clarity that we wanted to go all in and we really wanted podcasting to be that conversation that we most wanted to be a part of, we had to take a step back and say, based on the merits and the success of our shows alone, are we going to be able to achieve that goal? In terms of people talking about us or being in a conversation about podcasting, even if we are not there at the table where people are talking about that particular topic. And the fact of the matter is, Reinvention Radio, Beyond Eight Figures, great shows, but our numbers aren't anywhere near the Joe Rogans of the world and the bigger players of the world and so on and so forth. So we weren't going to make inroads if we just kept pushing out new episodes, new episodes, new episodes. So we had to think about what else can we do here if this is the conversation we most want to be a part of. And we came to the conclusion of, you know what? Why isn't there, and this is about a year ago or so, and by the way, from the moment that we had this idea to the moment we launched our first episode, we did in about 100 days, our first issue of Podcast Magazine, we did in about 100 days. And so that was roughly October of 2019. And I was sitting there and I was thinking, you know, why isn't there a Sports Illustrated for the industry of podcasts? Why isn't there a Wired magazine for the industry of podcasts? Why isn't there a Vanity Fair, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? A Rolling Stone, if you will. And the reality is, as we look at how things are today, you know, podcasters are to the 2020s what a lot of rock stars were to the 1960s, right? I mean, you're starting to see a lot of those analogies and comparisons taking place. And so as we sat there, we're like, you know what? Why don't we create a consumer-facing, a fan-facing magazine, right? Nothing for podcasters. And again, love what those folks out there are doing for podcasters, but there's a much bigger opportunity. There's 100 million people just in the States alone who listen to podcasts on a monthly basis. Right now, there's about 1.5, 1.6 million podcasts, of which only about 400,000 or so of those are consistently producing episodes on an ongoing basis. So if you just look at the total available market, 100 million consumers just in the States versus 400,000 podcasters, it's a much bigger piece of the pie. And if you think about a wheel, right, Jason, you think about how there's the hub of the wheel and then you have all of these spokes, right? The question is, how do you become the hub of the wheel so that all of the players in the vertical connect to you and what it is that you're doing? Not all of those people who are in the world of podcasting, no matter, you know, whether it's headphones or Riverside or, you know, whatever, you name it, right? Any of the people who are connected to the industry, not all of those people are going to want to be guests on our shows, but all of those people are going to want to have some sort of coverage in a magazine that is called Podcast Magazine. And so that was the thinking. Really long answer to your question. And we didn't know if it was going to take flight, if people were going to gravitate towards what we were doing or not. But I knew that someone was going to do it, and I would have kicked myself if I wasn't the one to have made it happen.
And it's that new. That's what's crazy. It's only over over a year old.
Yeah, we're just not even our first. Yeah, February of 2021, that will be our 1 year anniversary issue. Yeah.
That's crazy. And that's awesome because you're right. I would have thought there's been a podcast magazine for years, and there wasn't. And that you took the opportunity to do that and take a chance on that. But what's more relevant is you know, I've ran a few companies and everything's about marketing strategy. And what you said is you need a bigger pond to fish in than 1.4 million podcasters out there or 400,000 that are doing anything, 100 actively, million listening. Yeah, actively. That's what I meant. So if you get over 100 million to do that, what I have found out being new, I am like a baby in the podcast game. And I love it. And I have a few podcasts that I listen to, but John Dumas recently was on the show and I was like, what's the secret to grow your podcast? And he said, you got to get on more podcasts because every podcaster usually listens to about 7. So, you know, that was the whole key is you got to share your information on more podcasts to really grow it. And it makes complete sense because I either know people who listen to podcasts and they listen to a lot more than one, or I know people that have never listened to any. And that's kind of the thing. And it's harder to get those that don't listen, which is outside your 100 million, than it is to get that 100 million to be in that. Some of the, I haven't seen any of the magazines, and I'm going to subscribe. I want to sign up right after this, but is there a way for pod, is there a way to advertise as a podcaster on the magazine to get your name out there to the listeners so you can get more subscribers out there to get your information out?
Yeah, so there's a couple of really interesting things, at least I would say they're interesting, that we've done. And of course, I mean, basic advertising, of course, partnerships and so on. We've got a live event that we're going to be doing called Pod Expo, where it's kind of the Comic-Con of the world of podcasts, et cetera. So lots of opportunities to get your show in front of podcast fans through what we're doing. That's easy, low-hanging fruit. We do our Ultimate Directory Podcasters every year, and that goes out to well over 100,000 podcast fans and so on. So yeah, lots of opportunities there. But one of the things, of course, that we do is we provide coverage, right? So we are an unbiased, neutral resource for people who are interested in the medium of podcasting. So we'll sit down with people like the Jocko Willinks of the world and you know, Jenna Kutcher and Adam Carolla and Dave Ramsey and so on. As a matter of fact, we're going to be sitting down and we're going to be happy to feature you in the magazine in an upcoming article as well. And those, frankly, are people that you see and you know and look, you know, I mean, there's a lot of folks get plenty of coverage. And I know some people say to us, hey, why are you providing more visibility for people who don't need it? And I get that argument. But one of the things that it allows us to do is to provide coverage for a lot of the podcasters that fly under the radar, right? So every month we have all of our under the radar features. We've got 20 odd category directors who have an under the radar feature every month, and they highlight a podcast that you probably haven't heard of, but should be listening to. We also have our Hot 50 Countdown. And so that is a show that we do that's our Casey Kasem style show that's based on the Hot 50 chart, which appears in Podcast Magazine every single month. So the question always is, well, how do you get on that chart? You know, and then how do you get onto the Countdown show? Literally just by fan vote. So, I mean, Jason, you could just tell your folks, hey, you know, vote for my show. If you love it, vote for my show at podcastmagazine.com/hot50. And I would love to see you give some of these guys a run for their money, because the top three are consistently pushing out and pushing, you know, and promoting it. And frankly, it's just based on fan votes. It's not based on ratings or reviews or subscribes or downloads. So that's one of the ways, right? The Hot 50 Countdown, a great way to get in front of podcast fans through the magazine and then through our podcast as well.
That's pretty cool. Let me, and thank you. I'm excited about that. And I'm a big believer of sharing information and non-bias. I go back to, you said the Casey Kasem top 50. That's pretty cool. Like, I'm a competitive dude. Everything I do, I want to win, right? I don't chase money. I want to win. Like, I wanted to be the biggest solar company in one state, then the biggest solar company in the Southeast, then the Midwest, you know, the largest American-made panel installer, the largest battery storage. I'm competitive. And now that I'm in the podcast thing, I got a little taste of success, and then it goes back to normalcy again. It's like, well, how do I get to the top? Because I'm so competitive, but I'm competitive because I want to share people's story. I want to help motivate people, help people get off their butt, quit making excuses. Don't find reasons to sit down and you know, I always say scared money don't make money. Find a reason to bet on yourself. And I think that a lot of podcasters, I know some that have started, and then they, when it gets tough or they don't get subscribers, they beat themselves up. They get depressed. They get down, and then they quit. And they had good content, but they quit on themselves because they get stuck in that my numbers aren't good, or I'm not getting enough listeners, or I'm not. I've seen that happen to a handful of people where I knew nothing about podcasting 2 or 3 years ago. I started listening to a few podcasts last year and then launched this year. But I've seen so many great shows that could have been fantastic. They just didn't stay the course or find, you know, sources like your company and Podcast Magazine or other sources out there to really be involved and read, pay attention. What are other people doing? How do you get the name out there? It's just unfortunate. So how many employees do you have at Podcast Magazine?
So we right now have a crew of 24, including our PR folks and our designers and so on and so forth.
It's a good crew for a magazine. That's a good number.
It is. I mean, the majority of them are category directors who have ownership and responsibility for one of the particular Apple Podcast categories. So we have a category director for business, a category director for arts, a category director for true crime, et cetera, et cetera. Fortunately, those are people who have signed up and I've been able to enroll them in the vision. Those are volunteer type positions. But, you know, at the same token, they're not getting, so to speak, paid through payroll. They have built up influence and credibility and authority and visibility, and there's a lot of benefits for them for being a part of what we're doing here. Eventually, of course, we would like to get to the point where we can pay everyone who's a contributor to this. But fortunately, we've been able to do this with the promise and the expectation of we're going to make them influencers in their own right, which they have become, because really, they're the gatekeeper. If you have a business related show and you want into Podcast Magazine, you're going to have to make friends with Michelle, and ultimately it's Michelle's decision in terms of who she features or doesn't, right? So there's a lot of upside on both sides of that, but yeah, we got about 24 people working on it on a consistent basis, the large majority of which are quote unquote volunteers.
That's really cool. And you know, I love what you're doing. Let's talk about the virtual New Media Summit. It's a unique opportunity for business owners and entrepreneurs to have the ability to meet important podcasters, right? And I know my company, we've advertised on people's show, Power Home Solar's advertised on people's show with commercials, right? Because in the markets we're in, a big podcaster, people listen, they go, oh, I want to own my power. There is an opportunity for, I'm not making money on my podcast, but this turns into a business for a lot of people. And there's a lot of marketing strategies there where business owners and entrepreneurs can meet and build relationships with some of these podcasters, almost be influencers for them, and get some ideas to share their message. How important do you think, especially after the year we had in 2020, that people need to know more about that virtual New Media Summit, and when is the next one?
Yeah, so the virtual New Media Summit is an offshoot of what we had done for years since 2017. Which was an event called the New Media Summit. Basically, at the New Media Summit, we would give people the opportunity to pitch leading podcasters on who they are and what they do, and literally get booked on their shows on the spot. Matter of fact, the average attendee who came to the New Media Summit would leave with roughly 22 bookings in hand. So as things started to devolve here, and we actually got in one of the last live events before COVID hit. So in March of 2020, we had our last in-person New Media Summit. And then, of course, things kind of went to hell in a handbasket here. And we've been doing it virtually ever since. And so it's actually worked out really, really well. And it gives people the opportunity, like I said, to meet and learn from top podcasters and then to be able to pitch them and get booked on their shows. February 8th and 9th are the next dates of the virtual New Media Summit. We'll have people from, the last time we had people from 12 different countries come in and join us virtually. And, you know, reality is, I would say that today, more so than ever, you have to embrace what's going on in the world of new media. You know, if new media is not a part of your business marketing and promotional strategy, I don't know what you're doing, because you're certainly leaving a lot of money on the table. And being a guest on podcasts is a great strategy. But, you know, it's not for everyone, and especially not for those who are unclear in terms of why they are investing their time and energy to be a guest on a show, right? I mean, you have to have a real clear understanding of why you would want to invest an hour to be a guest on, you know, the True Underdog podcast, or why you would want to invest 2 days to come and meet top podcasters. As long as you have that clarity, then I think it makes sense. But at the same token, you know, a lot of people just still aren't quite understanding the value and the power of what podcasts bring to the table, either as a host or as a guest.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the future is the new media. People, they have got to figure that out. You know, most of our business, I think we've got a $9 million advertising budget a month for lead gen and branding. And 90% of it is social media and or through media like podcasts, YouTube, stuff like that. That's the future, right? We people got to know that. They got to understand that the classic, and we do some television. It's not the same impressions. It's not the same thing. People want information now. They want to know what they've got. I mean, the world has completely changed. You've been an entrepreneur, you know, before. I'm sure you've had some good and bad in your career. Here at The True Underdog, we love to talk about overcoming adversity or overcoming the struggle. You talked a little bit about that in your childhood, but what about some struggle you had as an entrepreneur that the listeners can hear and relate to that you had to overcome or divert to do something else?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting because for a period of time, I was kicking myself about the deals gone bad, the real estate projects that I gave back to the bank, the .com that I had to walk away from, right? All of these things. And I'll go into some detail in a second here. But you know, more importantly, what I've come to realize is that I've been in the game. And there's something to be said for just patting yourself on the back and giving yourself credit as an entrepreneur, whether it's what you might deem as a success or what you might deem as a failure. And frankly, I don't think there is any such thing as failure. I think failure is just success with an unintended ending. But, you know, the reality is being in the game is the hardest part for most people. And I will say that I launched online really, really early. As a matter of fact, we launched a store on CompuServe's electronic mall in 1993. We took a catalog company and moved it online in 1993 onto CompuServe's electronic mall. So I saw that, you know, the Wayne Gretzky thing, right? I saw where that puck was going real early. I've been really good about that throughout my career. Matter of fact, I get tired of things long before others get tired of things. I get tired of hearing myself talk about things. I was telling people to get involved with podcasting for years. Matter of fact, at the first New Media Summit in 2017, when I first showed a stat there was only about 460,000 active podcasts. And so that's in total. And I was like, you got to jump on this thing now. Now, of course, you can see where the numbers are. But that that company that we launched on CompuServe's electronic mall eventually became liquor.com when I bought that domain along with bourbon.com in 1998. And so we were doing some pretty interesting things. And we had millions of dollars in revenue, started building up the company pretty good. And come 1999... and ideas on napkins are getting funded with millions of dollars in venture capital. And here we are with a category killer domain and a lot of the quote unquote heavy lifting done. We thought we had a pretty good opportunity to blow that up. Basically, we operated like FTD does for flowers, right? So in other words, you're in Carolina, you want to send a bottle of champagne to your buddy in LA who just closed a big deal. You'd work through us. We'd have that delivered through a local retailer and we'd take a cut of that sale, right? So that was what we were doing with liquor.com. Anyway, we had the March, we had the S-1 filed and we were ready to go public in March of 2000. And that's of course when everything imploded, right? And had to walk away from literally everything, including the domain. And we had brought in all these lettered saviors that Wall Street wanted to see, you know, the CEOs and CFOs and CTOs and WTFs, you know, all these lettered saviors that no one, in hindsight, they didn't really care or know enough about what they were doing or needed to do in order to make us successful at that point. But we bought into we were just blinded by that .com light. We bought into everything, hook, line, and sinker, signed away management rights and the whole nine to take this thing public. And I ended up quitting and walking away in August of 2000 from that and ended up getting into real estate development, did really well, developed about $50-odd million worth of property for the, you know, over the next 7-8 years. And then of course, there was a huge hit there, right? And ended up giving several properties back to the bank, had a beautiful portfolio of commercial and residential and office type properties and so on. Ended up having to give a few of those back to the bank. Man, and you know, it's just one of those things where on the surface, it looks like everything is going really, really well. And then a few quick, swift moves in the wrong direction, that rug can get pulled out from under you pretty, pretty quick. But yeah, man, that's just one of those things. And I think one of the reasons why I've been so interested in and focused on reinvention is just because I've reinvented my life at so many different points along the path. And interestingly enough, I was able to reclaim the liquor.com domain in late 2006. Ended up selling that company to Barry Diller's IAC, if you're familiar with IAC, in late of 2019. And still have a couple of real estate holdings, and I'll probably get back into that game. But you know, man, it's definitely been a lot of. Let me just say, I left a lot of zeros on the table over the years.
But you're not bitter about it. And I think the most important thing for listeners and viewers to understand is you tried. And I love how you said you don't believe in failing. You believe that if you still succeeded, you just had a different end result. I think that's key for people to understand that. I have four kids, got 1,700 employees. I talked to some leaders in the company, or I talked to my kids, and I'm like, listen, if you don't try, then you have failed. But if you at least attempt to do something, and you don't get that, you're going to learn from that. You're going to be stronger. You're going to be better. You're going to be wiser, but at least you attempted. There is no failure. It's a different result. I love that, because what kind of regret do people have never doing things? That's like a long-term pain. I wish I would have done that. Oh, I wish I would have done that. But when you at least attempted and gave it your college all and put it out there, you're like positive about it. I think people need to see that, you know, we all fail all the time. We fail more than we win, and that's what makes us stronger and better. And I think I got to ask you, is one of your gifts, your what's, is it reinvention?
So I think that my core gift, if we're going down the what is your what framework path, then my core gift is communicating. And the vehicle that I use to share that gift can vary from podcasting or speaking to writing, but those are the two main ways in which I'll share that core gift of communicating. But you know, the reality is the vehicle that I've used, or sort of the umbrella of reinvention, that is certainly something that has been an ongoing theme in my life and in your life and in everyone's life. We just as human beings, we don't always chalk it up to being a part of a cohesive whole. Right? Because the success that you have today and the abilities that you have today to do whatever it is that you want to be doing, and ultimately identifying those who you're most compelled to serve and serving them in as a powerful way as you possibly can only happen because of all of the things and all of the skills and all of the heartbreaks and all of the success that you have had that have led you to this point of being able to do precisely what it is that you're doing in this very moment and being able to tackle what's next for you. But without all of those experiences, really tough to be able to do much of anything in this moment in as proficient and cost-effective and time-effective manner as humanly possible. And you had to go through what you went through, as painful as it was, and that's certainly how I try to look at it, is all of those things have led me to the work that I'm doing right here in this very moment. And frankly, the most powerful work that I'm doing right now, it's not even Podcast Magazine. It's not anything that will even really, you won't find anywhere. The most powerful thing that I'm doing that leverages all of the skill sets and all of the trial and tribulation and brain damage that I've had to endure over all of these years is now being applied to actually helping my wife open a funeral home. And so that's what we're in the process of doing right now, is opening a funeral home for, it'll be a family business, but it's she'll lead the charge on that because she's been a funeral director and embalmer for the last 10 odd years. So that's what a lot of this has led to.
That's exciting stuff though, right? It's a new chapter. It's reinvention. You get to do something with the wife that's going to be in the family. And that's exciting stuff. I mean, my wife and my oldest are talking about opening some salon here soon. And I'm excited for it because she's been at home with all our kids for years and she's ready to kind of do her thing. And I'm excited for her. Let's talk jiu-jitsu for a second, right? This is a sport you've been practicing for over 20 years. You know, I'm sure you've jacked up some people and had some limbs twisted here and there. I am a huge fan of jiu-jitsu. I love MMA. You know, I used to like the strikers, but I have this fascination for those that just flip you over and it's like, I can break your arm or you need to tap, and they tap. I wish I had the time, I should find the time to learn that craft. Let's talk about that craft. Why is that important to you? What do you love about it? Who are like your top three MMA jiu-jitsu fighters you like?
Yeah. So a few things there, right? So first and foremost, I like many people, saw what Hoist Gracie did way back in the real early days of the UFC and just kind of scratched my head and went, okay, what on earth is going on here? Like this just, it doesn't even register how he's able to do what he's able to do at a buck 70 or however much he weighed at that
Crazy.
Point.
Crazy. And he fought right? big guys back then. They didn't have weight classes.
No weight classes, right? Crazy. Just fought the big boys. And so I was like, oh man, I gotta check this out. And so I did. I mean, the first time I tried jiu-jitsu was back in 1996. Didn't really get involved with it too much because there weren't any schools. It was just like there was nothing to really be found, just a couple things here and there. And then I started training under Carlson Gracie Sr., the old man, in Chicago, and trained with him for about 4 years before his passing, and then with his son, Carlson Gracie Jr. And so for me, it was just, I had been lifting weights for years, and I just needed some sort of, you know, I knew I wasn't going pro. I wasn't going amateur. Whatever a step below amateur was, I wasn't going for that either. So, you know, I knew it was, for me, it was really just a form of exercise. And I'm a cerebral kind of guy. And so it is a thinking man's game. Of course, a lot of it goes into muscle memory after you've been doing it long enough. But I just really liked the fact that it was a different form of exercise and cardio and full body and just so many different types of ways to use your assets, your weapons, your arms, your legs, just like everything that you had as weapons, in ways that seemed a little more realistic to me than kind of the fancier stuff that you see out there in terms of the taekwondos and the karates and the kung fus of the world. And I had done taekwondo as a kid and kind of liked it, but not realistic for what happens in a fight. You know, if there's very few one punch fights, and there's very few one kick fights. So what'll end up happening is at some point you're going to get tied up. At some point you're going to be in close quarters. You're no longer swinging on each other. And you're going to have to figure out what it is to do in order to take control of that situation. And so that was the original thinking, was let me go in, let me get a good workout, let me figure out, you know, exactly what it is that they're doing here. And yeah, of course, I mean, jiu-jitsu is a really unique sport because there are no levels from the standpoint of, they just kind of throw you in the deep end. And class one, you're in the same class as everyone else. And so you're sparring with people that have been training for years and sparring with people that are just starting. And of course, that's the most dangerous thing when you get two guys that are just starting together. But the reality is it's a sink or swim environment. And I have seen, I don't even know what the number is, but I'm going to say at least 1,000 guys and gals start and stop practicing jiu-jitsu over the years, and probably more than that. Because it's not for everyone. It is a tough sport, as we like to say. You know, it's not ballet. And if you're looking for ballet, this ain't it. And there's a lot of contact and a lot of bruises and marks and scrapes. I mean, I've broken noses. I've had knuckles and limbs and, I mean, just you name it, it's happened. But I've just always been real. I will say this, that I like the sport so much that I managed a couple of MMA fighters, perhaps even a couple guys that you know, for the first few years of their career. Stefan Bonner, who was in The Ultimate Fighter and in the finals of the of season one there, actually managed Bonner for the first 6 years of his career. And that's how much I love the sport.
That's awesome. I'm a fan. I just started watching this show on Netflix called Kingdom. It's solid. It's an MMA show. It's got some drama in it. And it's got, like, I saw Matt Hughes in it, some other fighters. But it's legit. Me and my wife are hooked. I'm like, this is cool stuff. I've got so much admiration for the sport, but even, and look, karate, I get it, the kicks, but you're exactly right. There is something magical about what you can do in jiu-jitsu when you're wrestling. It's like, how did he just do that? It's like a chokehold and they're out. I'm like, that is the coolest stuff. You know, I love it.
Yeah, Damian Mayo, I think, is probably my favorite MMA guy. You know, his jiu-jitsu is absolutely world-class. And when you look at where the sport of MMA is now, these guys are all so talented on every single level. And when you have guys that are talented strikers, talented wrestlers, talented, you know, with their hands and with their feet, and when you know exactly what's coming, and when you've seen so many fights and you've been in the cage for as long as you've been in the cage, and yet you can still pull off what it is that you want to pull off and submit people at that high of a level, it's pretty dang impressive. And that's one of the things when you look at Maya as just a high-level jiu-jitsu fighter. And there's not a lot of high-level jiu-jitsu fighters right now that are at the top of the game, because it's really, the game has evolved so much. But Maya's one of those guys that still can pull off submissions and takedowns and do things that he wants to do as a predominantly a jiu-jitsu fighter.
Was Frank Mir jiu-jitsu?
He was. I mean, and actually his daughter is training.
And he took out Brock Lesnar. Remember that? That was what I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Frank Lesnar tapped. Brock Lesnar tapped. Frank Mir got him. Yeah.
Yeah, he did. And you know, look, again, when Frank first started in the sport, he was submitting people that are like just jiu-jitsu 101 type moves. He did an elbow crank on some. This is, and your listeners and viewers right now are like, okay, what, can we talk about something else? But just real, you know, yeah. So
no,
real quick,
I like
here
that
on Frank.
Fine.
Yeah. You know, so Frank did just a basic elbow crank. I forget who he did it to, but like in hindsight, you look at it and you go, that's just one of the most basic jiu-jitsu moves that you can do. And he submitted a guy in one of his fights really early on, but it just goes to show you how much the game has evolved.
Yeah. And I think that's so cool that you do that. So listen, how can folks, we told them about discovering your what, how can they find you on social media, website, your podcast? Let's give a shout out how they can connect with you, Steve.
Yeah, man. So a couple of ways, right? So first and foremost, we did talk about what is your what? Discover the one amazing thing you're born to do. We give away a free copy of the entire New York Times bestseller at whatisyourwhat.com. So would love for you to grab a free copy of that, whatisyourwhat.com. And then, of course, we've been talking about podcasting and podcast magazine. Let me give you a backdoor link to be able to grab a free lifetime subscription to the magazine. So if you go to podcastmagazine.com/free, that'll get you in the back door there to grab a free lifetime subscription.
Ooh, I'm going to do that as well. And I got to get a signed copy of the book. Anybody that's writing, I started to write a book. I've never read an entire book. I've listened to some audiobooks. And I started writing a book through Scribe Media. I've got 3 chapters done. I don't do the writing. I do the talking. But I am super excited. Hopefully it's good. Share lots of stuff on it. But I'm excited about what it, you know, so helping somebody out, one person, then it was worth doing it, but I'm pretty jacked about it. Any tips? I mean, you've wrote a few books here. Any tips that I should pay attention to or do?
Yeah. I mean, look, first and foremost, you write the book that you most need, right? In terms of, for some of us, and as you said, you talked about regret earlier, you know, when we look back on our life, we will most regret failing to take action than taking action and realizing what those weak-minded people term as failure, right? Because as we discussed, you know, failure is just success with an unintended ending. It's just one of those terms of ignorance that people like to throw out at those who dare to soar in an attempt to bring them down, right? So for a lot of people, writing a book is one of those things on their bucket list. Like, I just don't want to reach my final days with all of this inside when I know I've got something to teach. I know I've got a bunch of stuff that'll help others. I want to make sure that I capture that and put it down. So, I mean, I would just simply say that one of the ways that I like to write, and I don't know if you're already far enough into this process, but for those who are looking to write, quick tip here, is I love the idea of just creating a long list of all of the topics that you want to cover. Maybe something that somebody said to you, maybe a particular thing that you say, maybe just something that you use as a mantra, whatever it might be. Just create a long list of just words or phrases or something like that that you want to cover. Once you go through that, write a paragraph about each of those things that you just wrote down on that list. After you do that, then start going through it and start picking apart and crossing off the things that you no longer think are important. And when you land on maybe 15 or 20 things that you really want to cover in a book, write a page on that. And by the time you get done with that page, you'll have a pretty good understanding of how all of that works together, how you can assemble that into chapters or sections, et cetera. And you'll make sure that you cover everything that you want covered in that book. And then, of course, you can just extrapolate out from that page that you've now written.
That's cool. That's it. Thank you for the tips. Appreciate that. So, Underdogs, thanks for listening again. My conversation with Steve Ulsher, his story inspires us to keep moving toward our purpose in life, our what, and work toward what inspires us every day. I'm hopeful that every single day, one of my listeners will find their what, move toward their purpose in life. That's a wrap. Bam!
And that concludes another episode here on True Underdog. If you're interested in hearing more, make sure you subscribe at iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the YouTube channel. You can always visit trueunderdog.com, subscribe to all of them. Make sure you check out our newest episodes coming out on Mondays and Thursdays. True Underdog, baby.
Bam. True Underdog. Damn. Damn. Damn.